This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
There I am. Hi, everybody. Sorry about that. Trying to get all my videos loaded. I have a lot of videos to play for you today. Weird. Usually it's a lot of pictures. Today, for whatever reason, it's a lot of videos. So thank you for joining me on the After Party Live. Please click the like button right out of the gate. Really appreciate that. And if you're here and you haven't subscribed, I'm really slowly working my way up to 2,000 subscribers. So please do that as well. Would absolutely love to count you as a subscriber on this show. So it is Travel Tuesday. We're going to some swimming holes and hopefully gear you up for a little bit of fun over the summer. Some places that maybe you might actually be able to go to as we take a look at some nice areas around California to take a little dip, little chunky dunk, as it were. Good Mark Thompson show. I'm sorry to bid farewell to Hal Rudnick. He was a great co-host. Tomorrow I have another co-host, a new co-host that I haven't met before, but Mark says he's amazing. I believe him. If Mark likes him, so do I. His name is Phil Schumann, and he's a pretty famous news guy in the Southern California area. So Phil will be on with me tomorrow on the Mark Thompson show, and I hope you'll be there as well. Nicky Maduro show at 10 o'clock, another bite-sized Nicky Maduro show for tomorrow. So, and then followed by the After Party Live. Thank you to everyone who contributes to all three shows, but specifically this show here on the After Party. It's because of you that I keep pushing forward and keep doing what I love. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to share it with you every day. All right, let's get into it. Why don't we? Because the first thing that I thought we could talk about is this rare bird that was found. This bird, you see him, the little blue guy? This is the first time that anyone has ever taken his picture in North America. So really, really rare to see this rare bird. And he was spotted on a beach in Oregon, of all places. And ornithologists say this is mind-blowing, mind-blowing. The beach is Hug Point, like a kiss and a hug, Hug Point. And they think this might be the first official images in North America of this rare blue rock thrush is the name of the bird, a blue rock thrush. So this man named Michael Sanchez was setting up his new camera. He was trying to capture a waterfall at Oregon's Hug Point right at sunrise when he saw this cute little blue bird hopping around. So he snapped a few pictures, said he didn't think much more of it. A week later, he's famous because these little pictures of this blue bird, which I'm sure had he known, he probably would have taken a lot more shots, has made him the star of there's a birding community. And he may have taken the first picture of this blue rock thrush in North America. This species is native to East Asia. It's only ever been spotted here once before. We've never seen anything like this. That was 1997. But the American Birding Association rejected that sighting. If these images that Mr. Sanchez took are verified by local and national birding groups, he could be credited as the first person to successfully record a blue rock thrush in this region. He said, I was very surprised just how stirred up everybody got over this. He said it was totally mind-blowing. He's a middle school band director and a musician who recently took up photography as a hobby. So he hasn't been doing this very long. He said, I never considered myself really much of a birder, but he said this bird was really cute and kind of unusual. He'd never seen anything like it. So he thought, I've got to post it on the socials, right? Not long after this, a friend of a friend who's an avid birder reached out. From its unique blue and chestnut plumage, the bird looked distinctively like a male blue rock thrush. So it turned out he set a birding record. A lot of times, according to the Bird Alliance of Oregon, when this happens, there's a lot of effort among the birding community to try to verify it because everyone wants to go and see it for themselves. So volunteer experts have been working with Sanchez to verify the image and confirm the location. No other local birders have been able to spot this bird since he took a picture of it. But there was another blue rock thrush sighting 4 days later, this time at the Farallon Islands off San Francisco. Was it the same bird? Was it a different bird? We don't know. But they think maybe it was the same blue rock thrush, but they weren't able to get a picture of it out at the Farallons in San Francisco. We know this bird is really far from home. Maybe it has faulty navigation, they say. Maybe it got lost and then trapped in a strong wind or hitched a ride on a ship. They don't know. Usually when these really rare birds that aren't native here turn up, it's because maybe they're seabirds, they're spotted far offshore, which is why this is a big story here, this little bird. He really is kind of chubby and cute, isn't he? Yeah, I like him. It's a reminder of how unexpected and fascinating birding can be. I guess I wouldn't have thought that it would be this, but now I'm intrigued. It's always neat for them, they say, to see how big the world is and how incredible these creatures are. And Mr. Sanchez says, I wasn't a birder before, but this has really opened my eyes. I guess I'm a birder at this point. He said, I think I'm in the club. That's it. It's a cute little guy. All right, now I have my video to show you because I saw this story yesterday, and because it was on video, I didn't get a chance to show it to you. And then Deidre sent it to me. So huge thank you to Deidre for giving me the kick I need to make sure that I include our zebras in the animal section. So check out this video. Zebras got loose in the Pacific Northwest, and apparently
pretty wild day here in Northland. Yeah, the Washington State Patrol tells me that four zebras were able to escape from the truck they were being transported in on eastbound I-90 earlier today. This after the driver pulled over to secure her trailer.
Just after noon, drivers on I-90 did a double take
and realized we were looking at a bunch of zebras eating grass on the side of the off-ramp.
Their striped silhouettes set against the sound of speeding cars behind them.
A little bit of disbelief, and then really just how can we help?
North Bend local Dan Barnett says other drivers had the same urge to help.
The cars on the off-ramp kind of pulled over by the guardrail and kind of lined up really close to kind of make a makeshift fence to keep them from coming up onto the off-ramp area.
Their efforts worked. The zebras galloped away from the interstate.
I've only ever seen them in a zoo, so that was a first.
Past the busy brunch rush at a restaurant called South Fork.
So then everybody just kind of at the same time, and then all saw the zebras on the road.
Zebras on the road.
Pretty busy road.
Moments captured by South Fork's regular customer, John Eric Anez.
This must be a joke.
And then I saw some cars like get into the neighborhoods to like to try to fence them in or something. I don't know.
But they got away.
They just started hanging out in the grass in somebody's yard over here across the street.
Hey, baby.
The baby of the pack.
You're okay.
Wound up in this woman's backyard. And when officers arrived, they were able to corner another, but not before this happened.
You know, I called someone. I was like, so I found the missing zebras. Like, they're in my yard. You know, not sure what to do.
They then ran into her neighbor's property.
Two of them are at the barn just past my house.
That's where I got to meet two of them who got corralled there with the help of rodeo professionals. This property, about a 5-minute drive from the interstate.
So they made it pretty far up, yeah.
Now for locals like Whitney Blomquist, April 28th, 2024, will forever be known as
the day the zebras came into North Bend.
But in all seriousness,
they're really beautiful animals and through no fault of their own found themselves in a very confusing place. So let's just hope they all make it to home or wherever that is tonight.
As for where the zebras are going, where they were coming from, and why, these are details we are still waiting on from authorities. But stay with King Vibe as we monitor all of the details of this developing news story. Pretty crazy here in North Bend. Reporting in North Bend, I'm Maddie White.
And thank you to Maddie and the reporting on that story. Yeah, this is pretty crazy. I can't imagine driving down the street and seeing zebras running toward my car. So one of the comments on the Twitter post was, it's a Jumanji come to life. So I'm glad those zebras were okay. That little baby zebra in that yard was kind of a heartbreaker. Man. Thank you for that story, Deidre. And Lori sent me a story that I wanted to present to you as well. It's really long and I can't play the whole thing, but there is a prison in, let me go back to it. I think it's Indiana. And the prison has a program called the Forward program. It's a maximum security prison. It's the Pendleton Prison in Indiana. And I have some words from one of the sergeants that's in charge of this program, where the prisoners there at this maximum security prison go in and help take care of cats. The cats eventually to be adopted out to their forever homes, but it gives them someone to take care of, teaches them how to take care of someone other than themselves. And so I thought it was worth sharing a bit of this with you as well.
And then the cats profit from it so much. They're just the cats are just awesome.
And these cats are available for adoption?
They are, through the Animal Protection League in Anderson, Indiana. You can go online and fill out an application, or you can call them and let them know who you'd like to, who you're interested in. When you do adopt them, there is a fee, and you get, they come microchipped, they're shots, and they also get a first visit at the vet. We do take donations. The donations need to be sent to the APL and put on there. It's for the Forward program, for anything else that we get.
And then you think this would be a good program to expand to other facilities?
Oh, yeah. It'd be a really amazing program to expand to other facilities. It's given me an opportunity to understand that it's not just about me. It gives me an opportunity also to care for something other than myself. I have kids, but, you know, since I'm incarcerated, I don't actually get to spend that time with them and, you know, care for them. So this gives me a chance to understand, like, hey, somebody else needs me, so when I go home, I can actually care for my kids as well. So it's taught me a lot. It gives me a lot of time to be able to learn stuff too.
How have you seen the program itself change?
A lot, because, you know, like me working here for so long, I know like what it should be and what the expectations is of from Ms. Reinhardt or Ms.
Yeah. So an interesting program. It's called the Forward Program. They have a whole cat room. They have all of these cats. All the cats have been, you know, found by the side of the road or have needed help in some way. And so the prisoners go in and take care of them. And again, that guy that you just saw on screen, he's in for 40 years. So I don't know what he did, but these are some pretty serious criminals in there that are, I don't know, able to have animals interact with them. And maybe that'll soften them up a little bit. I don't know, but good story. And thank you, Lori, for sending it in. How about wine? Should we talk about wine? I'm always up for talking about wine. Unfortunately, though, wine production is down. It's because of global warming. It's the worst wine production around the world in 62 years because of extreme climate events. We've got fires, droughts, other conditions associated with a changing global climate. All of this combines to make the world's 2023 wine production the worst in 62 years. They have this report. It's called the State of the World Vine and Wine Sector. And 2023 report released by the France-based International Organization of Vine and Wine cites extreme environmental concerns as a primary cause of a 10% drop in global wine production in 2023. I don't know if that means prices are going to go up or what's going to happen, but it's everything. Drought, extreme heat, fire, heavy rain causing flooding, fungal disease across major northern and southern hemisphere wine production regions. All factors. It's a 10% decrease in the world's steepest drop in the wine production in 62 years. So we had a 10% drop. The grape harvest, the worst reported since 1961. So if you go to the store and the wine's a little more pricey, that's why. That's what's going on, unfortunately. How about a lotto story of the day? What do you think? This lady, she wins quite a pretty penny here while she's waiting for her chicken meal. You know, gotta have a little chicken. So she's waiting, and she goes by the name Faithful Grandmother, as you can see here on the check. So Faithful Grandmother picked up her lottery tickets April 22nd while she was waiting for her order of chicken at Maryland chain Royal Farms. And she didn't find out she won until she was home. She wins $229,680 from a fast play lottery ticket that she bought out of a vending machine while she was waiting for her chicken to be done. Her daughter says she called me and said, "I think I won the progressive jackpot." She was so calm. So she went to her mother's house to double check the $10 Casino Royale slot ticket and saw that, yes, her mother did indeed win. As far as what she's going to do with the winnings, Faithful Grandmother, not sure. She says she hasn't thought about it because she's still in shock. But she is going to enjoy life, she said. She's happy, she's grateful, and she'll probably help out her grandkids. So another great lottery story here on the After Party Live. We're going to have a crappy lottery story one time, you know, where things don't work out, right? How much have you lost playing the lottery? One of those stories. Here's a story about a record. This is a Nigerian chess champion who played for 60 consecutive hours and apparently won every single game played. That's right. I mean, I guess he deserves to win the chess championship then, right? Yeah, I think so too. Let's take a look at this video. Uh-oh. I can't hear anything. Can you? Nope. Mm-mm. Maybe I did it wrong. I'm sorry, you guys. Hold on. Here it is. I got it. All right, now we're ready to rock and roll.
A Nigerian chess champion set a new record tonight in Times Square.
They cheered for Tunde Onakoya, now the world record holder for the longest chess marathon. He had all the right moves. He's been playing nonstop for 58 hours, and at this moment, apparently he's still going. The previous record was 56 hours, 9 minutes and 37 seconds. Mr. Onakoya had a lot of supporters cheering him on.
Pretty excited. I mean, we came all the way here from different places, and it's just so cool to see. I've been following him on Instagram. He's doing amazing things in Nigeria. For him to set out to do this is incredible.
And it's not just about chess. Onakoya is a child education advocate in Nigeria, and he's hoping the event will raise $1 million for children's education across Africa.
That's a long time to concentrate.
That's a lot of chess.
What's your next move and your opponent's next move?
That's a lot of anything. 50-something, that's too much.
It is. He still looks good.
He's alive.
Yeah, that is a long time to concentrate. But here is something I think maybe I could pull off. You know, you see these records and you think, could I do that? Would I want to do that? Well, maybe, depending. If I was raising money for something that I believed in, perhaps I could do something like this. Here's a woman who now has the record for interviewing the most people in a certain amount of time. She's got a YouTube show. She's a Nigerian woman. She interviewed 90 people in 55 hours to set a world record. She gave herself 5-minute breaks. I think she had a 5-minute break an hour. Yeah. She, her name is Clara Chizoba Kronborg, and she hosts this talk show on YouTube called Women's World Show. She beat out the previous record holder, who was Rob Oliver. He had interviewed people for 37 hours and 44 minutes. She does it for 55 hours and 24 minutes. The interview marathon, including conversations with people from various backgrounds, speaking about how they achieved success in their respective fields. She had politicians on, she had business owners, content creators, you name it. People were on the show. She said the record attempt was about bringing together diverse individuals, sharing their inspiring narratives, and forging meaningful connections on a global scale. She said she's committed to amplifying voices, particularly those of hardworking women, in their stories to inspire others facing similar challenges. She also is from Nigeria. She said she grew up in poverty. Now, when she did this record-setting event, again, she was allowed a 5-minute break every hour. So she said her voice was hoarse and rusty by the end. She had to drink a lot of water, and she wore adult diapers to do this. She also experienced neck and back pain, sleepiness, cramps she had. She said, I recalling everything I went through physically, mentally, financially, emotionally, it feels unreal. But now she's got the record. She set the record. I could probably talk to people for 50 hours. I don't know, 2 days of talking. I could pull it off. Would I want to pull it off? I don't know. That's a whole other story. I don't know. Here's something. It's a kind of a health segment we have going on right now. This is absolutely fascinating. They have found the cause of a pretty serious disease. And, you know, the first step is find out the cause and then see if you can come up with a cure. So it's a genetic rare movement disorder, and it causes people to have muscle weakness, difficulty coordinating their bodily movement. The person looks kind of like they're moving in a jerky way. They have an unsteady way of walking. They have difficulty speaking. It's called spinocerebellar ataxia 4. They call it SCA4. Spinocerebellar ataxia 4, SCA4. All right. And it also causes a progressive loss of feeling in your hands and feet and a loss of your reflexes. There was no cure for it. And until now, there was no known cause. But they did know it was genetic. They've tried to look into this for more than 25 years. What is causing this disease? And now they've used advanced sequencing technology to analyze the genetics of a couple of families in Utah that apparently have people with the disease. And they found a section in a gene called ZFHX3. That's a lot longer than it should be. It has an extra long string of repetitive DNA. And the human cells that have that extra long version look like they're sick cells. They aren't able to recycle proteins like they should. And some have clumps of stuck together protein as well. So they don't look right. The mutation, according to senior researchers at the University of Utah, is a toxic expanded repeat, and we think it jams up how a cell deals with unfolded or misfolded proteins. So they're pretty sure that's what's causing this SCA4. Now comes the how do we fix it, right? This new study published in the journal Genetics, figuring out the cause of SCA4, the first step in developing effective treatments. So now they're going to get to work trying to figure it out. They do have a potential therapy for a similar disease called SCA2. It's currently in clinical trial. There's a possibility it could work for SCA4, especially given the results of this study. So they're asking people with the disease to come and get tested and see if maybe they can be part of this study. Who knows? If there's a cure for that, what amazing things we're doing. Speaking of amazing, how about this story? I think this is going to affect us all eventually. It's osteoarthritis in the knees. You have bad knees, you know? used to be, finally, after, you know, you had some pain or whatever, they'd catch it on an x-ray, right? Well, now, the ability to detect knee osteoarthritis with a blood test up to 8 years before it appears on x-rays has been developed. They say it could lead to therapies that delay disease progression and restore your joint health. This study, conducted at Duke University, published Friday in Science Advances. Researchers say the blood test has validity in identifying key biomarkers of osteoarthritis. It could foretell the disease's development and progression. They say such a scientific advance would be of a higher caliber than the current diagnostic tools. Often they don't identify osteoarthritis until it's led to structural joint damage. The findings, they say, demonstrate that the disease process of osteoarthritis can precede symptoms and x-ray changes that we typically associate with the diagnosis. They get a head start on this. It represents a shift from the current thinking that osteoarthritis begins when an x-ray shows abnormalities, like a loss of cartilage, the formation of spurs, the thickening of bone between the cartilage layer, that type of thing. It's the most common form of arthritis. Osteoarthritis affects 32.5 million U.S. adults, most often in hands, hips, and knees, that according to the CDC. Pain, stiffness, swelling could limit function and lead to disability. So the study proved what researchers expected, that very early osteoarthritis is silent and is hiding in plain sight because a cartilage tissue doesn't have nerves and can deteriorate early without giving off pain-related danger signals. So once an x-ray displays signs of osteoarthritis, the changes can be irreversible. The current treatments can only control the symptoms. But if they know ahead of time that you're headed this way, then they say it'll be easier to slow or stop the disease process if doctors can encourage patients to take preventative measures. Yay! This is great. The blood biomarker test, 74% accurate in predicting the progression of knee osteoarthritis, 85% accurate in diagnosing knee osteoarthritis. So, great. They're fine-tuning the test's predictive capabilities now. They looked at 200 white women in the UK, and half of them had a diagnosis of osteoarthritis. They discovered a small number of biomarkers in the blood test correctly distinguish women with the knee osteoarthritis from those free of the disease up to 8 years later. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a good thing. They're hoping within 5 or so years, they could have enough validation and experience with the blood test to make it available to the general public and start moving forward with the way that we kind of get ahead of it and, you know, preventative medicine, as it were. All right, are you guys ready for it? Let's go. We're doing it because it is, woohoo, Travel Tuesday, everybody. Time to take a little break from the week and check out, maybe think about where we'd like to go, even if we won't go, but maybe we will. Who knows? Let's go swimming. What do you think? I like it. The first stop on our trip is the Smith River. Well, doesn't that look nice? I'll take it. I'll go to the Smith River with you. Kick around for a day. This is the confluence of the Six Rivers National Forest. So you drive inland from Crescent City along Highway 199, and you see this shimmering form of the Smith River. It is wild and scenic, the only major river system in California to flow freely and naturally without a single dam on its entire length. They say the water here is irresistible. Iridescent blues, greens, so clear you can watch shoals of native salmon and trout deep below the surface. The best swimming holes are around the confluence of the North and South Forks. Locals call the area Second Bridge, but the official name is Nels Christensen Memorial Bridge, and they say it's easily recognizable by the long rope swing that hangs from the arching span. The waters are relatively warm, shallow. They got a pebble beach there as the river bends downstream. And right behind the river is a beautiful evergreen forest, 300-foot giants of Jedediah Smith redwoods. Beautiful, at the Redwood State Park there. They think this region contains nearly half of all the remaining old-growth redwoods, coast redwoods in the world. So, beautiful. The best time to visit? Between June and October, so coming right up. Next, let's go to Keo's Hot Springs in Bishop. Pretty nice. That looks like a nice day by the hot springs. Let's do that. Any trip to the Eastern Sierra, according to The Guardian, isn't complete without a soak in Keo's Hot Springs. The Owens Valley Paiute call these springs Utu-Utu-Paya. It's a sacred site for bathing and healing and was once the center of a permanent Paiute village. This Bishop area has a lot of well-known natural hot springs. They talk about the case to be made for minimizing our impact on these wild places by visiting maintained facilities like this one. This is an Art Deco bathhouse, and it's hardly changed since it was built in 1919. Open-air bathing, a mix of covered decks and sun lounges, painted in a cool mint. The water is really hot, about 130 degrees Fahrenheit. They cool it with a series of fountains to reach the two pools at a safe temperature, but the water is mineral-rich, so it'll feel like a little thick when you're in, right? But they say that mineral-rich waters are an extension of the surrounding wilderness, and it's the perfect beginning and ending to skiing, backpacking, or climbing trips in this area. So this is off of Highway 395, Keoughs, K-E-O-U-G-H-S, Keoughs. Oh, beautiful. Where do you want to go next? Well, how about the North Fork of the American River? That's a day trip for us. Easy. We could get there, right? Look at that. So beautiful. Look at that swimming hole. This is the Auburn State Recreational Area. This is clear water of the North Fork of the American River, which originates in the Sierra Nevada, northwest of Tahoe. And from there, it carves through miles of rugged, remote wilderness, scouring a deep canyon on its journey to the Sacramento Valley. This written by The Guardian. An impenetrable sanctuary, one of the great refugia for wildlife in the Northern Sierra. So this landscape, they've tried to put roads in or, you know, develop it, and they've managed to hold off and keep this area rugged and wild for a long time. The Mineral Bar Campground's the perfect way to find this swimming hole. The Colfax Iowa Hill Bridge is a wire suspension bridge built in 1923, a popular put-in takeout spot for whitewater rafting during the spring and early summer. By July, though, the waters are usually low enough that it becomes a family-friendly swimming hole known as the bubble bath. The best spots, they say, are further upstream. This river has some of the friendliest wet hiking around. Gold panners have worn unofficial trails on the banks, but it's easiest, they say, to stick to the riverbed. Wade knee or waist deep through the water, crossing frequently to avoid obstacles. At almost every bend, the river scours swimming holes, which you have to jump into before you go upstream. So, and then about a mile or so ahead, you find this deep pool defined by large slabs of greenstone on all sides, enormous trout in the depths, flecks of sand, or maybe gold, glinting. Sounds good. That's beautiful. Sounds kind of hard to find, maybe. You got to hike to this one. So maybe we'll just look at that on pictures. I don't know. How about this one? Look at that. It's really pretty. This is the Kaweah River in Sequoia National Park. The granite majesty, the wildlife, the pristine water, and a fraction of visitors that you'll find in other places. This is all in Sequoia National Park. About 20 miles to reach the foothills to the town of Three Rivers, one of the steepest watersheds in America. And they say it feels like it's barely contained by its own banks, this river. For much of the year, whitewater, surging across the bedrock. But summer, the heat becomes unbearable, the water drops to a safe level, the river slows to reveal still green pools and sandy beaches, polished granite slabs sparkling in the sun. The Cliffs is a swimming hole just within the Sequoia National Park gate. They say it's an excellent beginning or ending to adventures in this area, too, even though it's only a 5-minute walk from the road. Most people just whip right past it on their way to see the big trees, and they miss it altogether. So from the road, it's about a 5-minute walk to the river. They've got a little trail there. Again, it's called the Kaweah River, K-A-W-E-A-H, Kaweah River in Sequoia National Park. Yeah, pretty. Let's go to the San Diego area. Why don't we do that? I'll go swimming with you here. This is Black's Beach, Torrey Pines State National Reserve. A piece of wilderness hidden within a major metro area, Black's Beach is unusual by Southern California standards in that access is limited, virtually invisible from the roadway. You can park on the mesa above and walk down steep trails or take a long walk along the beach from either end. They say it's just the right level of effort to make sure there are never too many people right at this spot. There are more than 400 varieties of native plants and wildflowers. Coastal sage scrub, maritime succulents, chaparral all line the high cliffs. It's a sanctuary for wind-sculpted Pinus toriana. They have gravel trails that wind along, beautiful lookout spots, and the north end of Black's, by the way, is clothing optional. So, you know, take that as you will. You can stay on the other end or you can go have a little more extra fun. The north end of Black's, clothing optional. If you've never had a nude swim in the ocean, this is the place. The turquoise water is as warm as it gets in California. As you stretch in the summer sun, it's easy to forget that you actually are in the middle of a sprawling city. So this is Black's Beach at Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve. It's so beautiful. Look at that. So places close to home, places a little farther out. I don't know. It has me in the summer mood all of a sudden. Where are you guys going? I'm going to the chat. Where are we headed? Nudists. Woohoo. Yeah, Black's Beach near. There is a nude beach there, Walter. Only one end, though. The other end, you gotta put those swim trunks back on, or your Speedos, whatever it is. Doug says, I'm thinking Carmel by the Sea for an overnighter. Hotel, dinner, breakfast. Oh, Doug, that sounds perfect. Yes, thank you very much. I'm glad you made it for Travel Tuesday. Is it, I mean, maybe it's just me, but it's one of my favorite parts of the week. I feel like such a daydreamer. I'm encouraging the daydreaming of all of you guys. You should be working, and here I have you daydreaming. Yes. I'd love to go back to Argentina, says William. I miss it. Thank you, by the way. William sent me a meme of the week, an entry for meme of the week. So if you find a meme as you scout around, shoot me an email because I'm going to do the meme of the week. I actually had one of them, forgot to do it last Friday, like a bonehead. But we'll get to it this Friday. Maybe I'll show more than one. Again, it's Kim at theafterparty.live. You can also find me at kimmcallister@gmail.com. Two M's, two C's, two L's with that. The Hitchhiker's Guide to Everywhere. Yeah, I know. So nice. Love it. Oh, Deidre says, my son lives in the Bishop Mammoth area. The climbers go into the desert and have crazy parties at the Wild Hot Springs near Bishop. That'd be fun. Jim says, Auburn has a lot of great hiking, bicycling trails, too. I want to go see some of these places. I don't know if I'm going to hike 20 miles to get to a swimming hole. Used to go camping when I was a little girl at this place called Standish and Hickey State Park. It's in Leggett, surrounded by beautiful redwood trees, and it's right along the Eel River. And you would walk over this little bridge that was a log cut in half and take your life in your hands as you're walking over it. Or you could throw your raft in and raft down a swiftly moving river to a swimming hole area. And I spent a lot of summers laying at this swimming hole, kind of a pebbly beach. So it wasn't like you were sticking your feet in the sand. It was sandy and pebbly, kind of rough. And then you walked into the water in the Eel River and there's all these giant rocks. So you kind of have to wear flip-flops into the water. But just such summer fun. Doug talking about 4 Mile Beach, 4 Mile south of Santa Cruz is nice. Clothing optional too. Well, you guys are all into it. Deidre, my son is in Alaska ice climbing on Denali. He has to take a bush plane to access the glacier. Talk about travels. I guess this is the time to do these things where you're ice climbing when you're young, right? You don't have the osteoarthritis in your knees. You can get up the mountain. It's okay. What a trip. He'll never forget it. That's amazing. Yeah. Walter says, I wouldn't swim 20 miles to a hiking trail either. Yeah, no. The one that's was, what, 5 minutes off the main road? I'm good with that. This one, you might have me with this one. I could walk down a really long beach to get to Black's Beach. I don't know if I'd take the steep trail. Sometimes those scare me a little bit. But I'd go down to the far end of the beach and walk it in. Absolutely. Lori says, I have a great book, California Wildlife Viewing Guide. Great short hikes. Sounds fun. Well, hopefully this got us a little bit in the mood when it comes to traveling or at least taking little day trips around California, maybe a long weekend. What's your favorite weekend getaway in California? We like to go to Monterey, to the Monterey Aquarium. I love going to Carmel. Santa Cruz, I went to high school there, so it's not really away for me. It's kind of like coming home in a way. And because I live in the wine country, I've never really had a wine country weekend because home's right here. So I've never stayed in a hotel and done all these things in the wine country because that doesn't make much sense. I did go to San Francisco, even though I worked there at the time, to take my daughter to the ballet and stayed overnight. And that was really fun, like being a tourist in your own city. So I don't know. What do you think? Karen says, there's a green sand beach on Hawaii Island formed from olivine, a lesser grade of peridot. I have seen pictures of the green sand beach on Hawaii. It's hard to get to, though, is it not? I've heard that it's quite a hike. It's not in a very touristy area, but it's supposed to be amazing. And the pictures I've seen of it are incredible. I'm trying to look up an image for you right now. That green sand beach is really something else. Here's a look at it here. Let me save it for you. It's one of those things where I think if you go see it, if you manage to make your way there, you never, never forget it, right? One of these kinds of places where it's, yeah, one of these things where once you turn the corner, I don't think you ever, that vision ever goes out of your mind. No, I'm having trouble. Well, let me save it one more time. It's so pretty. Here, maybe I can just show it to you. Here, I'll share my screen. Yeah, it's so beautiful. And now I have to take the San Diego picture down to show you this one. There it is. Yeah, green sand beach. So cool. I mean, how many times in your life are you ever going to say that's something you saw, right? But again, I think it might be complicated to get to. So I don't know. Walter's planning to go do some hiking this afternoon. Only a few blocks to a toy store to see if they have any good puzzles. You need a hike to the toy store? Okay, that's all right. Liz likes to go to any beach that allows dogs, just one south of Half Moon Bay. I think there must be a lot in Sonoma County, because every time I go to a beach that's about a half, maybe a half hour away from me out toward Bodega, there's always people with their dogs. Not off leash, though. And I've seen enough stories where people jump into the water to save their animals that I always like to keep my dog on leash when we go anywhere. BW Rock says you can do an ATV or a helicopter to Mahana's Green Beach. It's the juxtaposition of the green sand and the blue water and the black rocks. So incredible. What a vision. Yeah. Mahalo for that. Appreciate it. Mama says I'm more of an amusement park person. There's something, though, to getting out of the commercial stuff, right? And getting into nature and hiking and being physical and showing your kids that a day of activity can be really fun and looking through tide pools or looking for lizards on rocks while you're hiking. I mean, those are some pretty fun things too. I'm not discounting the fun day at the amusement park, but yeah. Anyway, Karen, thank you for that. I appreciate the thought. Dillon Beach, says Sandy, is an off-leash dog beach. So is Fort Funston and Carmel Beach. I don't know if Fort Funston still is. I know they had a bunch of different rule changes there. So Doug's going to find that green beach, no problemo. Yeah. Liz's dog stays away from the water. Every dog I ever have had, Liz, which is two, I had a Siberian Husky and now a Golden Retriever, and they both head right for the water. They'd like the first thing they want to do is jump in. Yeah. And one last comment from John. We used to go to Alameda Beach and catch these little snakes. Good memories. Yeah, it's those times, not necessarily the times your family spent a bunch of money on Disneyland tickets and all the stuff that goes with that, how expensive it is. Sometimes it's the memories of going camping. You know, as I was talking about the Eel River, I can remember my mom had us pick, at the time we were annoyed by her, but we would all be able to bring a friend, and then we all had to pick a number, a little piece of paper out of a coffee can, and that was our chore for the day. So you were the dishwasher, you were the dish dryer, you know, you were the water fetcher, whatever it was. So just fun memories. Sometimes it's not all about how much we spend. It's about, you know, those memories that you make in nature and just hanging out with your family and friends. All right, enough of me going on and on. So tomorrow, a Nicki Maduro show at 10 o'clock, followed by the Mark Thompson show at 11. And again, a new guest host who I haven't met yet. His name is Phil Schumann, and I'm really excited to hang out with him for a couple of hours on the Mark Thompson show. John Rothman will be on the show tomorrow. Also, Dr. Peter Chin Hong. Did you hear that in quite a few samples, they found the bird flu in milk samples, but apparently it's inactive and we can't catch it? I have a lot of questions for Dr. Peter Chin Hong, so we'll ask him all of this tomorrow. I hope you'll join me for that, and then right back here on the After Party Live. Again, thank you to everyone who has contributed to the show. I just really can't tell you how much I appreciate it. If you would like to submit a meme of the week, please do so. Again, kim@theafterparty.live, kimmcallister@gmail.com, 2 M's, 2 C's, and 2 L's. So, love to hear from you and hopefully get your meme shown on Friday, the meme of the week. Until then, I hope you have a really great rest of your day. Make it a good one, and I'll see you right back here on the After Party Live. Bye, everyone.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.